I never went to Portland until I started doing music. When I was in Black Flag, that's when I started going to Portland.
Right.
And Oregon, like Eugene and other parts of Oregon, but mainly Portland and Eugene.
Yes.
It'd be like a weekend. We get in the van and drive up there and, you know, Friday, Saturday, or maybe go up to Vancouver. And so I learned Oregon via rock and roll. And there, I really like, and I'm not just kissing up, but I really do like Portland. But I must say, the Pacific Northwest, it's very mysterious. In that a lot of people who probably wouldn't fit in anywhere else, they go to the Pacific Northwest because you can kind of get gone. And I've met some really way out characters in Oregon. Like, you know, the vet who can't handle, you know, a lot of noise.
Right.
Or the person who, you know, dislocated from his family, doesn't really get along. The Pacific Northwest has a lot of leave alone space. And I started meeting some really intense people when I was in Oregon as a young person.
You're pretty intense yourself.
Yeah, I've been told.
I'm Gregory Day. You're listening to PDXPodcast.com. Today's special guest is Henry Rollins.
Let me tell you something so you get this straight. It's not my work that got her this way. My work is clean.
So what does cause it?
The world causes it. This causes it. This causes it. This causes it. Information overload. All the electronics around you poisoning the airwaves. Technological fucking civilization. But we still have all this shit.
More from Henry.
Shannon Wheeler says hello. I know he illustrated one of your books back in the day.
Oh, yeah. He sure did.
Fun guy. He loves you.
He's brilliant. Yeah, he's great.
He is brilliant. One of the best interviews I've ever done. He's so open. He's a lot like you.
Oh, cool.
Travels
yeah,
a lot.
I've hung out with him like once, and he did those illustrations. I was a fan of Too Much Coffee Man, and so I contacted him.
Yeah, so funny.
The podcast.
Yes.
That was, well, you know I do it with Heidi.
Right.
It was Heidi's idea. Heidi and I have a very unique relationship. She's been working with me. We've been working together for like almost 21 years.
Right.
And, I see her more than I see anybody, unless when I'm on the road, I see my road manager every day. And I don't know, about a year ago at some point, Heidi said, here's an idea. I know every story you have. Because I've just told her like everything I know after, you know, 2 decades. And she said, there's all these stories that you have that you don't tell on stage that, you know, or you haven't told in a long time. Let's do a podcast. And I just kind of come up with a list of stories that I know you know, or things that I know that you can talk about, and let's do it. And so got an extra microphone. You know, I have a microphone I use for my radio show.
Right.
And I got a different box so I can put in 2 mic lines, and got taught how to use it. And then we started doing this podcast, and so that took off. It does oddly well.
Right. No, you can tell you have a very friendly relationship together. And I think she's a perfect co-host because she allows you to tell your story. She doesn't interrupt you and allows you to keep your train of thought.
Yeah.
Now, I've actually been reading I Preferred Blur again, too. What I found really fascinating was reading about your time in Iran.
Yeah, I mean, I try
it's
to
great.
Go to these places to... Because, I mean, I think as an adult, you need to watch the news, or at any age, but you need to watch the news and realize no matter who, you know, what side you're watching. And like, there's the Fox side,
yes.
And then, in my opinion, there's kind of like everything else in varying grades of partisanship.
Yeah, you're right about that.
But all news outlets have an agenda.
Right.
And even the ones I agree with, I go, okay, wait a minute. You're leaving parts out. Like when I was watching Strzok testify yesterday.
Yes.
I was watching through one news carrier, and they're showing some parts of his testimony where he's being made to agree, like, well, I did say that, where he was like, you know, some of the texting he was doing were kind of mean to the people other people that he lives with in Virginia.
Yes.
And, you know, you're like, okay, that was a pretty uncool thing to say. Not illegal, just like, you know, not my pal. And then you watch another news carrier, and they don't go near that stuff.
That's true. That's so true.
Because it puts him in a better light and just shows the Trump supporters to be distracting. It's a show trial. I said, okay. And so even when you – the point I'm making is no matter who you watch, everyone's trying to sell you something. And so I try to go into these places with no agenda, but, well, I was there, and here's what I saw.
Right,
and
no agenda, right.
And I've been going to places like Iran for many years and going on stage.
It comes
and
across.
Telling stories.
Yes, it comes across without an agenda.
Well, yeah, and that's what I try and do. And I always say, look, I'm no expert, you know, but I only tell stories about places where I've been. And I only make comment on countries that I've been to. And it's basically like a travelogue. It's not, you know, here's how much rainfall they have. It's like, look, I walked through the city and so at my show, I might be the only place you're going to hear that reportage of Islamabad, Pakistan, when Benazir Bhutto was assassinated, and I was there for that. I just happened to be there when that happened. And I'm not a journalist, but I'm a witness. And so what we're doing with the slideshow is many years ago, I started bringing a camera. And over the years, I upgraded my camera gear so I could, you know, just take a better shot.
So how many years have you been taking photos?
Oh, many. But I'm not like a natural photographer, but
I
do get to good places. So it took me a while to understand, you know, light, f-stop, and what not to do and not to be so obvious and put the image in the center of the shot every time, like, you know, people do in their own vacation. And because I am an amateur with like really good location. Mm-hmm. And so I try to make the photos do what I can do with writing, where I can like really tell you the story. I tried to make the photos start doing that, and that turned into a real love affair of taking photos, because you realize there's so much more you can do with a camera that you can really make photos emote. So I try and take photographs of like the ones I like to see that make me think, that make me feel in my own way. I'm trying to take those kind of photos myself.
Right. And that's an important message. You touched on that at your Soka University presentation. You're encouraging young people to get passports, which I think is a wonderful thing. And you shared a very personal story of handing out bars of soap. It reminded me of Anthony Bourdain's experiences in Haiti. He caused a riot, too, by trying to hand out food to people. It's just a very difficult, complicated situation that requires a bit of nuance. And I thought that was the highlight for me of that presentation.
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, perhaps the biggest lesson I've learned from this kind of unorthodox travel, because I travel a lot for work, if you want to call it that. Like for tour, I'll get to 20, 21 countries a year.
We can call it work.
Well, yeah, but it's kind of the same places. You know, it's the continent of Europe, UK, Scandinavia, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, and that's all fantastic, but it's not Central Asia or Cuba or Haiti. And so these other, this kind of extracurricular travel, the thing that I learned is helping to help is a very nuanced thing. And if you're not really, really careful, you will do more harm than good.
Yes, yes.
Like, you want to hand out food. Why? Because you're trying to do something good.
Right.
What did you do? You caused a mini riot where, like, you know, a guy got his shirt ripped because the other guy's trying to grab the food away from the other one, and everyone is, you know, mad. And, like, whoa, it's just food. And then you realize what a Western idea you're operating from and how little you understand about where you are and how, as your well intentions will screw you and your good intentions, you're on an ego trip.
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
I'll help. Like, no, you're not a hero and you're not helping. You didn't do nearly enough study and you really have to understand human management a lot more.
Right.
And so anyone who wants to help, I learned that, well, you should let the pros do it, and you see how careful and how inch by inch they are when they're trying to help. Another thing I learned.
Very important lesson there.
Maybe the biggest. And the other big lesson I learned, like the other major takeaway, is that Western ideas don't always help in non-Western situations. In fact, a Western idea in a non-Western environment is often like the thread that undoes a situation. Like when you bring in the toilets to a place like Haiti and you leave them and you come back a year later and all the copper has been stripped and the whole thing has been, ripped apart. Some donor, who's giving money to the agency who's putting
He feels
together,
good.
They might go, well, never again. These people are ungrateful. No, they're not ungrateful. You're attaching a Western value and reaction. Well, these people, they like being poor. No one likes being poor. You can't put in these, like, even something like a latrine and leave it in a place that's really, really poor, because you're dealing with people who operate on a daily level of uncertainty that you have never had, except for that one time you got lost in the supermarket and they said your name over the PA and your mom found you in the frozen food section a minute and a half later. There are people who live their entire lives with food and water insecurity. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a lot of things in the West that they just don't have in other countries, like a vacation, a retirement plan, life insurance. We plot in the West. We plot and plan for our future.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know you, but I bet you think of what you're going to be doing years from now, or you save for the future, or you think about your future, monetarily, fiscally, so you'll get by. And a lot of the West is about that. Well, when I'm 60, I'm going to. There's parts of the world where there's just not an idea like that, because your next bowl of food, well, hopefully it's this week, and the next water, well, we hope to find some. So everything is, you plan your life a few hours at a time. And when
a lot of people, just like you said, they just have some shade, a stick, and a shirt. I mean, it's just really sad.
And if you really want to kind of get that idea, Ryszard Kapuściński, the great Polish journalist, he passed away. But his writing from Africa, you really understand just the uncertainty that people live, that they're born into. And quite often a Western idea is detrimental. And so I try and travel and take photographs in a non-exploitive, like there's some news outlets where they kind of run in and they're like thrill seekers, like, we went here and no one said we could go and we got the photos and we ran out. It's a very popular news outlet, relatively new. I won't mention their names, but I think they're kind of, if that's where news is going, I think the world is in for some real pain, because they just report without empathy.
Right, right.
And so that's what I've been trying to do as an older guy in the last several years, is travel to understand.
Yes.
Ask questions, take photos, and I'm really trying to figure out in my own way. You know,
but could you take any photos in North Korea?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, good. What's your take on the current situation in North Korea? Because you visited a few times, right?
I've only been there
just
once.
Just the once,
That's a visa that took me years to get. They don't give Americans very many, you know, or America. You have to have a very well-connected travel agent. And I don't think that access is going to get any easier with the current president. I think that President Trump should have listened to all his advisors who actually, you know this stuff. I'm willing to bet that all his advisors told him pretty much the same thing about Kim. And it doesn't seem to me that Trump listened at all. And so when I was there, and me, you know, I'm just some guy, I saw a lot of poverty and a lot of really terrified people, just tired and terrified and hungry. The most insight I got was from my tour guide. And since I was there alone, I was not part of a group. Like, there's some Norwegians there, some Australians, some
right,
Brits.
Right.
You know, they're all together. It's understandable. But here comes this, like, tattooed, single American. And so they assigned two people to me. And, you know, one who took
right.
notes and the other one who spoke. The woman rarely spoke to me. She just took notes. I'd say good morning, and she'd take half a page of notes. And she'd kind of smirk at me, like everything I said was ridiculous. But Kim, my male tour guide, he tried to figure me out, and I tried to figure him out. And I realized by the second day that he's talking to me casually, but he's trying to catch me in a lie.
Oh, I see.
So what did you say you did again for a living? I'm like, oh, I see. You're a detective. And that's when they went from tour guides to tour spies. Mm-hmm. And I've been interrogated before. You know, I've been a witness in a crime. And so I've sat there and been grilled by detectives. And if you're going to lie, they'll probably catch you. And so I realized, I'm like, oh, he's not friendly. He's pumping me for information.
Right.
Like, what does he want? And after a few days, I was able to, you know, because my travel agent said, don't get recognized in North Korea. You know, if your tour guides recognize you, that you've been in the film, TV.
Do you ever grow a beard or a mustache so you don't get recognized?
I don't think I'd
recognize you that way.
I'm just really low key.
Okay.
You know, I didn't lie. I just left out a lot of stuff.
Right.
And by the end of the tour, you know, so I'm there a week. By the end of my time there, Kim, I started asking questions of, like, you know, playing the dumb American. Like, they had, you know, North Korea had just been to, like, the World Games or whatever, the big soccer, the international soccer games or whatever they're called.
Right.
I don't follow sports. North Korea went, and they brought in professional Chinese audience members to clap for them. So I said, so you were in South Africa to watch your team play soccer, right? And he said, no. And I said, well, why not? You couldn't get a babysitter? You know, pretending I didn't know that he can't leave.
Yes.
And I go, so what do you think of Seoul? You like Seoul? I've been there a few times. It's really nice. And he went, no, I've never been. I go, really? It's right down the road. And why don't you go? Because I want you to explain to me why you can't leave. And it made him a little uncomfortable, but I don't think he really caught on. And he tried to explain that, you know, he can't leave. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't want to, of course. I was like, oh, okay. But by the end of it, he said, look, one day I'm going to try and get to Los Angeles. I said, you do that, Kim. And when you do that, you find this thing called the Internet, and you find me, and we'll go out and we'll get a burrito.
I think you're sincere about that, too. I think you really mean that.
Oh, hell yeah. Are you kidding? I'd love to see Kim again in the West. He's a good guy. And so, you know, the travel I do informs the stories I tell. And it now I on this tour, I've been telling the stories with photos. Usually I'm just up on stage, you know, a million words a minute. But this time it's going to be the photos that have informed many of the travel stories that I've been telling my audience for many years.
I want to transition a little bit to my favorite quote or my favorite essay of yours, Iron and the Soul. You get asked about this all the time because I lift weights, and this is an essay that's really, it's something I think about all the time. 200 pounds is always 200 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, you it's a way to find yourself in the gym. You know,
yes.
There's a lot of self-discovery can happen. You know,
it's beautifully written. It's poetry to me.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, even if you go into the gym like with a friend, you're kind of on your own. I mean, and you see what you've got under the hood. And for me, the workout is never about physical strength. It was all the other things I've learned from working out about myself. And the ways I've gotten stronger is I've learned stamina and how to realize that, okay, this hurts, and I've got another 20 minutes to go, and I will get through it. And it's been that's been the most helpful of, like, any workout I've ever done. What I learned was I can kind of handle almost anything.
Right.
I'm not a tough guy, but the gym made me better, a better person. I've never been a people person. I would rather administer, to them. But I call myself a component. I'm like a frozen yogurt machine. Like, need a pint, need a quart, here. I output. Here's the radio show. Here's the next
Thank
book.
Thank you.
Yeah, here's the tour. And
appreciate that.
You don't need to clap. Just please keep showing up. And like, well, after the show, come out to dinner. Thank you. I don't want to. I mean, but I just, you know, I once I'm done with this, I just would really like to be back on my own. But I'm happy to be in front of a bunch of people. But I don't want to really be with you very long. And so and it's not an anti-person thing. Not at all. I like humans very much. It's just it's not easy to get it makes me nervous to be with them for very long, but I can be in front of them for hours. And so I just I'm like a toaster or a microwave. I serve a purpose, and when you don't need me, you don't even think about me until you come over, and isn't it great that it didn't break today? And you can microwave your food. And so a lot of what I do is because I spend a lot of time alone, hence all the books and all the travel.
All books.
Yeah, and that is kind of a solitary gig, you know, unless you're doing a big, history book where you have a room full of fact finders and you're...
Right.
And that's I've never worked that way, but... otherwise, writing can be intensely solitary. I mean, the book's not going to write itself. And so it's not like I decided one day, okay, I'm going to shut the doors and close myself off and write. I live like that anyway. And writing came from being a solitary person who just looks at things and maybe sees it differently sometimes. And traveling alone, I've traveled... there's some situations where you can't travel alone, like in Iran, as an American, because of our wonderful history with Iran, they want a government tour guide with you. If you're from Belgium, just go ahead, go there and go ski. There's Europeans there all the time for the skiing.
Right.
If you're an American, they keep their eyes on you, and I can totally understand. North Korea, you're going to have people with you. I mean, you literally can't leave the hotel without your tour guide.
Absolutely right. Yes.
When I went to Cuba, I got there because I could get in with a tour group, and it's how I got a hotel bed. for the week I was there. So I was just in a van with a bunch of nice people from Chicago who were really cool. But other than that, and the NGOs I've worked with, like in South Sudan and Uganda, I've been like with an NGO. So you are traveling or doing documentary work. You are with a team and you're working. And so there are times I've traveled with someone, but most of the time, like last time I was in Central Asia, I was just went across it solo with a backpack. And often I'm in Africa for weeks at a time, alone. Peruvian Andes, so I'm by myself. And so I don't get lonely. I don't miss anybody. And I don't want anybody missing me. I just don't want to be in a position where I have to call someone and, put a kid to bed. I'm just not wired that way. I'm not against it. I just don't feel the need to have it. And so it makes it... I probably miss out on a lot of joy in a life. This all looks like it might be nice, but I get to do a lot of stuff because I don't get lonely and I don't want to go home.
Yes. No, right.
And so I can go along, as they say.
Yes.
And from that, good writing, interesting stories, and perhaps something that I can bring to an audience that they have never heard before, at least not that point of view.
Right.
And so that's one of the upsides of kind of being a weirdo.
So interesting stories. If there's one thing you're full of, it's interesting stories. You have a Showtime special coming up, Keep Talking, Pal, August 10th. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Just give us a little bit of a preview.
Yeah, it was shot in beautiful Portland recently. And it's just a lot of just ideas and stuff that I have been carting around on the last chunk of tour dates. So it's just like the material I was like conversing in and was kind of, had in my bag at the time. And cut together into, I think, a 60-minute show. Not much editing. I was doing 75-minute sets, which was very short for me. And it was like, wow, that's all. A lot of performers on stage, they do like 75 minutes, and I did two shows of like 75 minutes. It felt oddly short, like I was getting away without really going out and beating myself with a stick, which is what I usually do. And so the thing is just a very utilitarian performance video, in that it's a stage, there's not a lot of else happening except me talking to an audience. And so it is what it is. Very well shot. Professional company who does this for a living shot it. And it's coming out very soon. And it was amazing. My agent said, we're going to get you a Showtime special. And I said, you're high. And he said, you'll see. And they brought one of the guys from Showtime out to see me, and I met him after the show. And he said, what you just did on stage, we would love to bring to the screen. That was great. And I said, really? Because I wouldn't think that any legitimate outlet, I just figure I'm just too weird for any of those those kind of outlets. And he said, no, that was great. It'll be really, because it's not exactly stand-up. That was really cool.
Yes.
And the agent said, see? And I met that guy again. In a meeting, and he said, hey, and here we are.
Right.
And I'm still kind of amazed that I just saw my face with a Showtime logo over. I'm like, wow. That's because,
exciting.
I still have a minimum wage mindset. In my mind, I'm the guy from the ice cream store who, got in a punk rock band. And so when anything like this happens, I always think to myself, well, like, who, me? Really? Okay. So I don't think I'm anything. And so I just don't think any of that kind of thing would happen to me. And so it's just probably I work against myself in some ways. But that did happen.
Today's show was produced and edited by Gregory Day. If you'd like to contact me directly, you can reach me at greg@pdxpodcast.com. We'll be back next week with comedian Todd Barry. See you then.
I do like it up there. I just wonder how the human psyche gets used to all of that overcast, if that does not have an effect.
It does. It really does. But I'm English, where, you know, I'm sort of used to it. It's a hodgepodge here.
Yeah, the Brits get quite a bit of overcast. What part of England, if I can ask?
Manchester, Northern.
Oh, okay. That's a tough town, man.
Yes.
I mean, I've been doing shows in Manchester since 81. I was there earlier this year. And some of my favorite music in the world comes from there.
Yes, Morrissey and the Smiths and
I'm a Joy Division guy. I just think they're easily in the top five bands that's ever been. I just think it's impossibly good music.
Did you read Peter Hook's books on Joy Division and New Order?
No.
They're massive, massive books he wrote. I have yet to pop them open, but I own them. But yeah, he's quite the prolific biographer. I know you read a lot of biographies.
Yeah, I like to see, you know, what goes on in someone. Yeah, I've tried to write about Joy Division. It's a hard nut to crack. I mean, there's so much going on, it almost kind of paralyzes your hand. But I've written about them, like, in my radio show notes and in the LA Weekly, and I found out that Hook took some of that writing and put it on his website. Like, you know, here's what Henry Rollins said about Joy Division. I must say, I swelled up quite a bit. I thought that was really cool.
You swelled up.
You know, being acknowledged by Hook. I've met him before, but the fact that he liked what I said about Joy Division, I thought that was really cool. Someone told me, they said, you know, he quotes you on his website. I'm like, damn. Because I'm primarily a fan. You know, I'm a fan who made records, but I'm mainly a fan.